And this is KTOO. I'm Yvonne Crumery. Mining leaders had an optimistic outlook at the third annual Juneau Mining Forum this week. They say the next 4 years of Trump administration policy could mark a turning point for acceleration of resource development in Alaska. It's an opportunity that Hecla Greens Creek Mine on Admiralty Island plans to take full advantage of, says Mike Satre, Hecla's Director of Government Affairs.
There's great opportunity for our industry right now. There's great opportunity here in Alaska. We have the resources that the nation and that the world needs. We have the opportunity with this administration to hopefully move a bunch of projects forward.
Satre was a panelist for a federal issues discussion that considered how the new administration could change the U.S. mining industry's permitting process to streamline development. In his first day in office, Trump issued executive orders that called for more drilling, logging, and mining in Alaska. An order called, quote, Unleashing Alaska's Extraordinary Resource Potential, unquote, aims to undo most of the Biden administration's work to limit resource development in the state. Greens Creek is the largest silver mine in the nation and pays the most in property tax in Juneau. Last year, the U.S. Forest Service permitted a project for the mine to expand storage for its tailings, the rock left over after digging for metals. It was a five-year process, but its approval means the mine could live on for up to another 18 years. Jerry Mullins with the National Mining Association said the prolonged permitting process is one of the industry's biggest barriers, and it's a part of the reason that the U.S. is in a losing battle for mineral dominance against countries like China. He says that poses a risk to national security.
The permitting process itself is self-explanatory. It doesn't incentivize mining. It disincentivizes mining. You know, every day we see examples of just how important mineral production is. And every day we see examples of why it's so difficult to gain that mineral production.
He says he's hopeful that the new administration will find ways to expedite the process and increase opportunities for projects in the state. A plan to move Juneau City employees into the building that houses the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation downtown is inching toward reality. At a committee meeting earlier this week, Juneau Assembly members gave city administration the okay to begin negotiating the purchase of 2 floors of the Michael J. Burns building. If approved, they would become the new location for City Hall. The only assembly member to vote against the plan was Ella Atkison. She doesn't like the idea of taking office space once used by the state. She worries it might add to capital creep if there's less room in Juneau for state workers.
So I think it's our fiscally responsible option. I think it's best for our city employees. And that's not why I have such a problem with this proposal. I have an issue with owning this building with this mechanism, with this partner.
Less than half of city employees fit in the current City Hall building near Marine Park, and the building needs roughly $14 million in maintenance work. The city rents additional building space to accommodate all its staff. For years, city leaders have maintained that their current situation is not sustainable, and consolidating all city functions would help both city staff and the public. In previous years, the city controversially wanted to build a brand new City Hall. It asked voters to approve millions in bond debt in 2022 and 2023 to help pay for the bulk of it. Voters said no both times. But this time, the city doesn't need voter approval for the purchase because it doesn't need to take on bond debt to pay for it. The assembly put aside about $14.5 million for a City Hall project during recent budget cycles. Now the city plans to form what's called a condo association at the Michael J. Burns building, which would allow it to jointly own the building instead of renting. That's something Assemblymember Wade Bryson said is crucial.
The only way to do something for long term and be in business forever is to own it. It's just in the city's best interest. It's in our taxpayers' best interest.
City Manager Katie Kester says the city will begin with an offer of about $9.3 million for the floors, which is their appraised value. But she warned that the cost will likely change during negotiations because the owners are asking for about $12 million. She said the city will likely need another $5 million to renovate and improve the floors if the purchase is approved. Once Kester and the building owners settle on a price, she will go back to the assembly to request final approval of the purchase. And a state-run trust that owns much of the land surrounding a controversial mining project outside Haines has formally decided against purchasing federal mining claims in the area. The decision comes after the exploration project's biggest backer also cut ties in November. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, what it all means for the project remains unclear.
The Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority decided earlier this month that it will not purchase federal mining claims from a prospector who discovered copper and zinc outside of Haines more than 5 decades ago. The trust declined an interview request, but a spokesperson emphasized via email that the organization's resources must be used in the best interest of the trust, which funds mental health-related programs and services. She said the trust considered the cost of the claims and potential returns when making the decision. The trust board notified the prospector and former Haines resident, Merrill Palmer, of the decision after a closed-door board session in early February. American Pacific Mining Corp., which owns the nearby exploration project, was also notified. The specifics of why Palmer wants to sell his claims and what the trust decision might mean for the project remain unclear. But Jessica Plakta, the executive director of Lynn Canal Conservation, a Haines-based environmental nonprofit that opposes the potential mine, says there are a slew of factors that make the project risky.
The Palmer Project is located in a remote and hazardous location. It's inaccessible under deep snow for half a year, not to mention that it's dubious whether the deposit itself is worth mining, which is, of course, the bottom line for mining companies.
Palmer and the companies involved in the project either declined or could not be reached for comment. Palmer staked the claims in the 1960s. The claims went on to become the heart of the exploration project, known as the Palmer Project, that has long fueled intense political debate in the surrounding area. Developing a mine could inject a lot of investor dollars into the local economy and create high-paying jobs. But mines come with environmental risk. Critics worry the local environment, including the world's only bald eagle preserve, could be impacted. The claims mean Palmer could potentially earn royalties on minerals if a mine ever opens. More than 5 years ago, Palmer offered to relinquish those claims to the trust, which owns much of the surrounding land and leases it for exploration. The trust has been mulling the offer ever since. The trust's latest decision follows the news in November that Doa Metals and Mining, the multinational metals company that had backed the project for years, was giving up its roughly 70% stake. American Pacific Mining became the sole owner. American Pacific executives said differing visions for the project prompted the deal. In a video announcing the news, CEO Warwick Smith billed it as a fantastic move for American Pacific shareholders that puts the company on, quote, very solid footing.
If you were an American Pacific shareholder yesterday, you went to bed and the company had about $2.5 million in cash and owned 29% of the Palmer Project. When you wake up this morning, we have $16 million in cash and we own 100% of the 14 million ton VMS Palmer Project.
Smith added that newfound Republican control of the U.S. Senate, House, and White House will also contribute to what he says are bright days ahead for American Pacific. President Donald Trump signed an executive order in January that promised to unleash what he called Alaska's extraordinary resource potential, including as it relates to minerals.
The feeling in particular for Alaska, and I'll give an example of this, is things like permitting and these projects are going to move ahead quite rapidly.
Palmer Project critics, for their part, say Doa's exit and the trust decision raise questions about the project's value and what comes next. In Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And snow is melting early across large swaths of Alaska this year, threatening snow removal companies in Anchorage, even moving the Iditarod starting line hundreds of miles north. But it could also mean a big wildfire season for certain parts of the state. As Shelby Herbert reports for the Alaska Desk, scientists are already encouraging people to prepare.
Many of Alaska's most extreme wildfire seasons started with an early snow-off, the last day of the year when snow is visible in a certain area. That's the conclusion of a University of Alaska Fairbanks study published in early January that synthesized almost a century of Alaska fire weather data. Peter Bianyek, a climate scientist at UAF, co-authored that study. He says his research group found that snow is melting much earlier than in the past due to human-caused climate change.
There's a definite trend toward earlier snow-off in Alaska. That's kind of throughout the state. On top of that, we've had in the last few decades more frequent of these extreme fire years. You know, over a million acres is kind of how we define that.
Bianyek says the warm conditions that caused the snow to melt in the first place also accelerate hot, dry fire weather in the summer months.
So what happens during an early snow-off year? That's typically it means you have a warm spring. You know, when you have a lot of fire, you also typically have, you know, warmer Junes and Julys that follow that. Those warm conditions that started and resulted in the earlier snowbelt kind of persisted into the fire season in some form.
The UAF research team that put together the study shared its knowledge and took input from fire managers and experts across the state, like Heidi Strader, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service. Strader says it's too early to get a clear picture of what peak fire season will look like, but the study gives fire management agencies a pretty good idea of where to allocate resources in the spring.
This year is unique, as all years are, but the southern part of the state, around much of south central, parts of southwest, for instance, over into Bristol Bay, has a lot of areas that are snow-free, and that's not normal. Meanwhile, up in the interior here, we actually have a pretty decent snowpack going, although we do have an ice layer in there, which nobody loves, but it's there and it is moisture.
That's all to say that Alaska could see an early spring season with fires starting earlier than normal in southern Alaska. But the historically fire-prone area just south of the Brooks Range is fairly safe for now. Strader says it's possible that those conditions could change. South Central could still get a huge snow dump in March, which could mellow a severe fire season. But state and federal wildfire managers are still asking Alaskans to get ready. Beth Ipson is a spokesperson for the Bureau of Land Management Fire Service in Alaska, which coordinates wildfire response. She says, even though there's some snow on the ground, this is a good time for the public to help mitigate fire risk.
Public and firefighter safety is number one priority. And the public can help us out with that by being prepared. You know, prepare the property, prepare themselves in case they need to evacuate, and just be very aware of what's going on in the situation. Basically, just help us help you.
Ipson recommends that Alaskans in fire-prone areas start pruning trees, especially black spruce, within about 10 feet of their homes, consider installing a metal roof, and start stocking up on emergency supplies. And maybe most importantly, she says folks in rural areas should get to know their neighbors. That's because in an emergency, they're the first people they'll have to rely on, especially when help is hours away. Reporting in Fairbanks, I'm Shelby Herbert.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's 43 degrees and overcast this afternoon. It looks like there's a 100% chance of rain tonight and through the weekend. You're listening to KTOO.